of the Innovation Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Gagan, and this week we'll be talking about how it can be difficult to explain accessibility. So, one thing that I often come across is people can struggle to understand accessibility, and also sometimes it can be kind of hard to explain accessibility. So, the first thing here, right, what is the first thing that you think of when you hear accessibility? So, for example, a lot of people would say ramps and lifts, right, which those are really crucial, but they're just one piece of a much larger puzzle. So, a lot of people think of, as I kind of mentioned, more physical examples, like ramps and lifts when they think of accessibility, which, as I said, is to do with accessibility. However, accessibility is a lot more complicated than that, and a lot of people don't really understand how that isn't necessarily what accessibility actually is. So it's not just about physical spaces, it's more so, well, not more so, but it's increasingly about digital environments, communication, and attitudes. So there's a good analogy from Level Access, and it's talking about flour in a muffin, like the flour you use to bake with. So, accessibility isn't like blueberries that you sprinkle on top of a muffin after it's baked. It's the actual flour. It needs to be woven into every aspect from the very beginning for the muffin to even exist and be good. So that analogy right there kind of shows you that it's fundamental, not an add-on, which is something that a lot of people also don't really think of. They don't think of making things accessible from the beginning, which is something that I've kind of extensively talked about before. But even, you know, with companies I've talked to, they're like, oh yeah, you know, after we're done making everything, we go back and we do accessibility testing and all this stuff. And I'm like, why? Why are you spending then like days, weeks, or months doing accessibility testing at the end? Like, not that you shouldn't do accessibility testing, but that shouldn't be when you start to make things accessible. You should just do it from the start. Because as it kind of says, if you don't do it from the start, it's very hard to go back and then make it good if something's already built. So another thing is the curb cut effect. Curb cuts were designed for wheelchair users, but they benefit people with strollers, people with shopping carts, skateboarders, delivery drivers, etc. So this kind of shows how this kind of specialized design can actually have universal benefits. So that right there is kind of more so about how these kind of design principles that we adopt for accessibility can actually be really beneficial to everybody. And that also applies to digital things as well. But again, something that people often don't really understand when they hear accessibility, they think, oh, it's just for people who are disabled, which, yes, that is the primary function of, you know, accessibility. However, in reality, it actually has benefits for a lot of other people too. Another thing that people often fail to understand is, well, what does accessibility actually mean? What is the definition? And I'm sure that there are multiple different ones out there, but I suppose a more general one that makes it a lot easier to understand, in my opinion, it essentially removes barriers to enable users to engage and participate in everyday activities, ensuring equal access to information, services, and opportunities for everyone, regardless of ability. Now, something really important there is it will essentially give you equal opportunity, not equal outcome. You know, and I feel like that's really important to remember. The goal here isn't necessarily to give the same outcome, you know, it's to give the same opportunity. Like, if you're blind, for example, right, you might not necessarily want to go and go on a walk every day, you know, just because somebody who can see you wants to go on a walk every day. But if you did, you should have the opportunity to do so. You know, it's not about making people do things they don't want to do or anything like that. It's just about giving them the opportunity to do what they want to do and mean that they can do the same things that other people can also do. So another thing to really consider here is the social model of disability. Disability isn't solely about an individual's impairment, but actually about how society creates barriers. For example, a video without subtitles isn't just a problem for a deaf person, it's a problem created by the producer that disables access for that individual. So another thing I mentioned earlier is why it's actually difficult to explain. So it's often seen as a niche concern. As I mentioned earlier, they're like, oh, it's just for people with disabilities. How many of those are there really out there? Which, by the way, there's billions. So a lot, you know. But people don't really think about it like that. You know, you might not necessarily engage with people who are disabled in your everyday life. So it might not be at the kind of top of your mind that it's actually important. Number two, it's perceived as an extra rather than core to good design, which is kind of what I talked about earlier with the muffin analogy, which I actually really like, because that kind of really tells you that it is one of the essential ingredients, you know, to kind of making something actually good in the first place. Lack of personal experience is also another really big one. It means that people often don't actually see the need for accessibility. So, for example, they might not have really had any experience with blind people before, so they're like, okay, well, I don't need to add audio description to my video. Oh, actually, I don't need to add labels to my buttons. You know, oh, we don't need braille signage, you know, in our building. Whatever it is, just because they haven't had experience with somebody who can't see. And the same thing applies to all sorts of disabilities. I just use that one because it's the one I'm familiar with, you know. But yeah, I mean, those I find are the main reasons, to be honest, because once people have experience, like if I email somebody or if I call somebody or talk to somebody, generally they're interested in fixing the problems that I tell them about. They just don't even know, or they don't consider that it would actually affect anybody. Now, I kind of want to take you through a few kind of myths that you may have experienced around accessibility, which you may have heard me talk about before because they are super prevalent, hence why we keep having to talk about them. So, number one is accessibility is only for people with permanent disabilities. So the fact is accessibility benefits everybody, including people with temporary disabilities, for example, a broken arm, an eye infection, and even situational impairments, for example, trying to watch a video in a noisy environment. Even if you're using a phone in bright sunlight, holding a baby, or navigating with one hand. So for example here, right, captions. So in reality, those are for people with hearing loss, right? But those are also really useful for people who are in loud places, because obviously you won't be able to hear the video, so you can look at the captions and understand what's going on. Language learners, I mean, if you've ever tried to learn a language, one of the most beneficial ways to actually learn is, let's say you're trying to learn Spanish. So you would watch a Spanish show, and you would watch it with the English captions or English subtitles, and that way you can kind of start to understand what people are saying, and it can actually be really helpful. Even if you just prefer to watch silently, like for example, a lot of people when they're on their phones, they will actually scroll with the sound off. My wife does this when she's on TikTok, and she will literally have no audio, but will just read the subtitles or captions for the TikToks. And that's kind of how she likes to generally watch TikTok anyway. Number two is accessible design is ugly or limits creativity. So the fact is, good accessible design is often clearer, simpler, and more user-friendly for everyone. It encourages thoughtful design, not restrictive design. Many innovative solutions actually arise from accessibility challenges. So, for example here, curb cuts. A lot of people probably thought that's going to look weird, it's going to seem very, you know, inconsistent and whatever, but in reality, nobody cares, and it's actually super useful for a lot of people. Accessibility is too expensive and time-consuming is the next one. So retrofitting accessibility is far more expensive and time-consuming than building it in from the start. You can't bake the blueberries in afterwards, for example. So yet again, kind of talks about the muffin example here. And like, that's the thing, what I kind of said earlier, is if you actually start doing accessibility from the start, you're not going to have to go back and put curb cuts in all these pavements. You know, if you just do it from the start, it's going to be a lot easier, it's going to cost a lot less money, and it's going to have a lot less time investment for you as well. Companies actually lose an estimated $6.9 billion annually because of inaccessible websites, because consumers with disabilities often opt for competitors. That is obviously a huge amount, you know, $6.9 billion, that is absolutely massive. So literally, just by having an accessible website, people could be making $6.9 billion extra a year. Another one is Designing with accessibility in mind leads to better return on investment. Companies that prioritize digital inclusion are twice as likely to have high shareholder returns, 28% higher revenue, and 30% better performance in economic profit margins. That's from Accenture, the Disability Equality Index analysis. So myth number four here is that accessibility is just about legal compliance. So while legal compliance like American Disability Act, the WCAG, and a lot of the new guidelines here in the EU are actual legal compliance and definitely a strong driver, accessibility is fundamentally about creative, inclusive, and equitable experiences. It's the right thing to do, not just a box to check. In 2023, there was a significant increase in ADA digital accessibility lawsuits, with over 4,600 of them. So that's a 14.1% rise from 2022. This shows that the legal landscape is definitely starting to change in terms of accessibility, and people are starting to do more about it. So, for example here, in terms of accessibility lawsuits, some of the things that could cause these sorts of things to happen are no alternative text, so this will make images invisible to screen reader users. Over 55.5% of pages contain images without descriptive alt text, according to the WebAIM 1 million report, which we've talked about here on the podcast before. It's actually really interesting and really useful. The next thing is low color contrast, difficult for users with color with visual impairments, including color blindness and low vision. Again, 79.1% of homepages have insufficient contrast. That's again according to the WebAIM 1 million report. That is a vast majority. That is huge. It's actually more than I would have probably estimated. So that means essentially 4 out of 5 websites that you visit do not have sufficient color contrast on their homepage. It's not even some abstract page somewhere. No, it's their homepage. No keyboard navigation. So users who cannot use a mouse due to motor impairment or using screen readers cannot access content. This is one that I experience a lot. Maybe you can't get to a pop-up, or you can't get to a certain part of a page. You can't click a button because it's not actually a button, etc. Hugely impactful. Again, missing or unclear form labels makes it impossible for screen readers to tell users what information to input. Again, happens to me all the time. I will be trying to fill out a form and it's like, text box. I'm like, okay, what do I put in the text box? And I have no idea, so I can't actually fill out the form. Videos without captions or transcript excludes deaf / hard of hearing users. And those can also actually be useful for blind people as well. For example, a transcript. Especially if it actually talks about what happens in the video, because not all videos are obviously spoken. So sometimes it's useful to have that for blind people too. Confusing navigation or complex language impacts users with cognitive difficulties, learning difficulties, or users who are easily overwhelmed. Communication, lack of sign language interpreters, information not in plain language, etc. Attitudinal, this is more so prejudice or assumptions about what disabled people can or cannot do, which kind of makes it more of a personal deficit rather than a societal issue, which is obviously not true. 60% of people underestimate how many people with disability, 60% of people underestimate how many people there are with disabilities, and 75% of people think of disabled people as needing to be cared for. That's from a study in the UK, which is obviously not true. So that right there kind of tells you the public opinion of people with disabilities. Number one, I kind of said earlier, people don't really think that there's that many people with disabilities when there literally are. There's almost 2 billion, I think. Especially when you consider temporary disabilities, it's more than that. And also then people underestimate what people with disabilities can do. And I experience this all the time, even with just speaking to me. A lot of people actually talk to my wife instead of me because for some reason they think because I'm blind, I can't speak like a normal human. So yeah, I mean, even just that will really impact somebody's experience and will make sort of a really big difference and can actually land you in a lot of trouble nowadays, as I kind of talked about. It seems like there is more of a legal precedent for this now, which is great, and definitely something to kind of keep in mind. Now we're going to talk a little bit about why the human and business case for accessibility. So the numbers, and I've talked about some of these before, but some of these are new. So one you've heard me talk about before is the global impact. There are over 1.3 billion people, or approximately 16% of the global population, with some form of disability, according to the WHO. This is a huge segment of the population. Now, I said this number is specifically people who have permanent disabilities, does not include people with temporary disabilities, etc. In terms of the UK, there are 16.1 million people with a disability in the UK. So that's actually 1 in 4 people, which is a huge amount. That's actually significantly more than the global average. The global numbers. So it's very interesting there as well. So digital exclusion specifically, disabled people are 50% over 50% more likely to face barriers to accessing digital services than non-disabled people. So the Web Accessibility State, WebAIM's 1 million project in 2025, reveals that 94.8% of the world's top 1 million homepages had technical WCAG failures, with an average of 51 errors per page, which is obviously a huge amount. This means that the vast majority of the web is still largely inaccessible. So that right there tells you a lot. Basically, look, to simplify it, a huge portion of the population are disabled, and a huge portion of the population don't have access to, you know, the digital world, if you will. 94% of websites. 94, that's over 9 out of 10. It's basically, you know, 19 out of 20, which is a huge amount of websites, aren't accessible. That is crazy. You know, I mean, just imagine, right? If you were looking to buy a coffee and you went into a coffee shop and they said, sorry, actually, we're not going to serve you here. And you had to go to 20 different cafes before you found one that would give you a coffee. That is essentially equivalent, which is obviously ridiculous. You shouldn't have to go to 20 different websites to find one that finally won't have any problems, at least on their homepage. And again, that's just homepages. They might have issues on other pages or whatever else. And these are just automated tests as well. Actual manual testing would probably reveal other problems, but you know, this is the best that we can obviously do. And again, it's 51 errors on average. This means that some will have hundreds on their homepages. And 51 is just the average of those pages. Now, obviously, those numbers are great, but the actual human impact itself is what actually matters. Being excluded from education, healthcare, employment, civic participation, and social engagement, obviously all super important things. Obviously, having access to all of those, and I've experienced some of these problems myself, even with education in college, you know, they would hand out a presentation, they would give out a PDF or whatever, and I wouldn't be able to read what's in it. It's obviously ridiculous. Even the buildings and stuff from my college were not super accessible, etc., etc., etc. You can go on and on and on for days just about education. And then obviously there's literally dozens and dozens and dozens of different ways which this will sort of impact you in your everyday life. The frustration and dehumanization of hitting constant barriers, which I experience all the time. Sometimes it is actually very upsetting when you can't use something. When all I'm trying to do is sign up for something, when all I want to do is fill out a form, you know, do some research, whatever, and I can't, you know. Even, for example, returning an Amazon package, I will try my best to not even put myself in a position where I will have to return an Amazon package, because I have to get the package, I have to go get on the bus to get to my nearest on post. Then when I get there, I have to ask somebody to help me get to On Post, because it's actually like inside of another shop, right? And for people who don't know, On Post is our post office. Then once I get to the post office, I have to ask the person at the post office to help me with the return, etc., etc., etc. And that last time I was actually there, the person who was helping me left and didn't tell me. So I just ended up standing there and I had to call the shop and get them to send somebody else so I could go back outside. It was a whole big mess. And then obviously I have to get home on the bus, etc., And sometimes you'll have to get a taxi because maybe it's really horrible outside and I don't want to walk super far. Or else, you know, the buses are like an hour apart or whatever it is. So yeah, it's a nightmare, you know, and that's just one example. So accessibility really does enable independence and full participation in society. Like what I talked about right there, I literally cannot even go return a package without the assistance of multiple people, which is obviously ridiculous. So now the actual business case, which again, I've talked about a little bit before, but this is not really about lawsuits or, you know, sort of legal compliance. So increased market reach. I mean, obviously, accessing those 1.3 billion customers, you know. The market for this is actually, you know, supposed to be around $13 trillion in disposable income, which is actually a huge amount. So the statistic earlier claiming that obviously businesses lose out on $6.9 billion a year, this is true. However, specific businesses could be making up to, you know, 13 trillion, well, obviously not the business, like just one business, but multiple businesses could be making up to $13 trillion extra a year just by having their website be accessible. They would get more customers. For example, a lot of more disabled people might sign up, and those people will probably tell their family and friends, hey, actually, I really like this service. It's actually accessible. I can actually use it. And then they'll be more likely to use it. Obviously, improved SEO, for example, clear headings, alt text, transcripts, etc., are really good for search engine optimization. So that just means that your website will show up higher in Google search results, which is obviously just really great for business. Enhanced usability for all. So a more accessible product is often a better product for everybody. Clearer language, better navigation, flexible options benefit every single user. None of those things make your product worse. None of those things make your product more expensive, make it take longer to make. In fact, generally, it will make it a lot easier to use. You'll be able to make it quicker. You won't have to spend as much time on coming up with these complicated layouts and complicated designs. No, just seriously, simple. That's generally what people prefer as well. Most customers, they want a simple experience. And that's not just, you know, people with disabilities, that's just everybody. When they go to your website, they just want the login button right there. They just want the sign up button right there. They don't want to have to click into this menu and that menu and then go through the pop-up and then click login. You know, that's obviously ridiculous. Brand reputation. Companies known for inclusivity attract and maintain more customers and talent. Innovation. Designing for constraints often leads to creative and universal solutions. For example, speech to text and dark mode. I mean, dark mode is a huge one. I know so many people who are not disabled who love dark mode. And a lot of these things are kind of inspired by making things accessible in the first place. The next thing to talk about here is kind of moving forward. Obviously, shifting people's mindsets. So changing from viewing accessibility as a burden to an opportunity and an ethical core responsibility. So obviously universal design principles. So this is kind of around creating environments and product usable by the widest range of people possible from the outset. For example, automatic doors, subtitles, adjustable height desks. All those things are great. Like you might think an adjustable desk, oh, that's great. You know, you could, you know, adjust it kind of so that you can be more comfortable. You know, it can be on like the right position for you to type on your keyboard. Maybe it can even go up high enough for you to be able to stand. But you might not realize that would actually benefit somebody with a wheelchair. They could hire the desk up so that they can actually, you know, fit their wheelchair in the desk. And that way they can actually sit at it properly and actually, you know, do whatever they're trying to do properly. So the thing is what you can do right now. So obviously educate yourself. So you can learn more about accessibility barriers and best practices. Simple steps can make a really big difference. Example, using heading structures in documents, adding alt text to your images when posting online, which is a huge one. So many people don't even know about that. The next time you're doing a post on LinkedIn or X or Facebook or Instagram, just check because they actually do have a way for you to add alt text. And it varies by platform, so I'm not going to try and give instructions here. But almost always when you're uploading an image, there's an alt text button, or it might say alternative text, or, you know, it could say a few different things. And literally it will just bring up a little text box. You type in what the image is And there you go, now somebody who can't see knows what's in the image. That right there is only going to take you a couple of extra seconds and could make a really big difference in somebody's day. I know that when I come across an image that actually has alt text, genuinely it makes me happy. I'm like, wow, that person actually knows about alt text. They actually bothered to, you know, take the time to put it in their post. Obviously, be an advocate. Speak up in your workplace or community about the importance of accessibility. Even if, for example, right, you know nothing about websites, you're not a developer, but you work at a company who has a website, or you're going to start a company or an organization, you know, you might say, okay, how can we make sure that people with disabilities can use our website? You know, you don't need to be the one to implement the technical solutions. You just need to kind of advocate for doing it in the first place. Obviously, empathy. Think about how different people might interact with your product, services, or the information that you create. Even if you, you know, design buildings, if you're an architect, or even if you just, you know, kind of send out documents or whatever it is, you know, making sure that they're accessible could make a really big difference. So obviously understanding and explaining accessibility can sometimes be difficult. However, the benefits for individuals, businesses, and societies as a whole make it an essential pursuit. It's about building a more equitable and usable world for everybody, which is obviously really, really important and really, really helpful just to everybody. I think that's a nice conclusion to the episode there, and hopefully it will give you some insight as to what you can do and why, although sometimes it's a little bit of a difficult thing to understand or to explain, it's really important to keep accessibility in mind. As always, I've been your host, Paul Gagan. This has been the Envision Tech Podcast, and I will see you all next week.